Okay, I'm just going to go ahead and get started. Everybody at the back, as you guys are finishing up, please, you know, take a seat and continue to enjoy the room and all the amenities. So again, thank you. For our third panel here, we are going to be looking at here cost and operations. This really, to me, gets to the meat of a lot of the items on the back in there. Who owns it? Who maintains it? Who pays for it? And these are a lot of the realistic items that also play a large part into people deciding to either place or not place EV infrastructure. So we're going to discover how to layer different funding opportunities to minimize the out-of-pocket costs through incentives, rebates, and various financing programs. And we're going to learn what happens after the chargers themselves are installed. Now these items are online. What does that mean and how is it addressed? So for our panelists, we have Brian, is it Fable? Fable. Continuing with my terrible name pronunciation. Brian graduated from Sac State University with a degree in economics. He's been with the California Energy Commission for almost 6 years. His work at the Energy Commission has included plug-in electric vehicle regional readiness planning, DC fast charging projects along highway corridors, and is the project manager for the Energy Commission's new streamlined mechanism to provide funding for the purchase and installation of electric vehicle chargers. This new mechanism is called the California Electric Vehicle Infrastructure Project, commonly referred to as Cal-EVIP. We then have Matt Bischoff and Ashley Burrow. Ashley has worked with the San Joaquin Valley Air Pollution Control District for over 12 years. Through the years that she's worked on various grant programs offered by the district, ranging from bike paths and park and ride lots to school buses and light-duty vehicles. Matthew is an air quality specialist with the San Joaquin Valley Air Pollution Control District, and he currently works on administration of various grant programs through the San Joaquin Valley, including the Charge Up EV Infrastructure Grant Program. We will also have Ann Camperson, who was on our first panel earlier. I won't go back through your stuff again unless you want me to. We can highlight it. Okay. All right. And then we're going to have Omar Ferris. Omar is an account manager for government institutions, ag and water, who has been with Southern California Edison for 6 years. He was born and raised in Visalia, received his Bachelor of Science in Business Management at Fresno State, and a Master of Arts in Leadership and Organizational Studies at Fresno Pacific University. Boy, that doesn't get any more local.
I mean, no reason to leave.
Well, we're glad to have you here. Thank you very much. And then we have Doug Sampson. So Doug is an account executive with ChargePoint. He's been with the company for over 2 years, serves 33 counties in California, from Fresno County all the way to the Oregon border. He has over a decade of professional experience with utilities, distributed energy resources, and electrified transportation. So we'll get started first with Brian. As we've said to everybody else, keep your eyes on the man right over here, and if you get the red card, it's kind of like soccer. The red card means you've got to step to the sideline, I think. I'm not really a soccer guy, but... Thank you very much.
Thank you, and I guarantee I'll get that red card. I usually do this in an hour, and I'm going to do it in 10 minutes. So if I go fast, sorry. This is all online as well. So again, Brian Fable, I'm project manager for Cal-EVIP, not Cal-EVIP, not Cal-VIP, not anything else. I always say this because... name is important to us, so Cal-EVIP, it's easy to chant, and it's been done at many conferences, so feel free anytime you want. So, goals. Let's use that same word, timeline. Historically, the Energy Commission's done funding through grant solicitations. That timeline's horrible. 5 years to design, get awards out, and get chargers in the ground. Way too long. Our goal of 250,000 cars on the road by 250,000 chargers installed by 2025 is not going to happen through grant solicitations. So we needed a new mechanism that speeds up the installation, reporting, and funding processes for EV chargers. Going back to, has Fresno's new permitting been effective? I would chime in that our first project to launch in Cal-EVIP was in December 2017 in Fresno County. We had bottlenecks on multiple aspects of eligible equipment, but also the permitting process. And I'd say just to about 2 months ago, we were only at about $700,000 in reservations. Today, we're over $1 million and about almost $1.1 million. We also have received applications for another 300,000. So within the last 2 months, we've doubled that number over a year and a half. So yes, it's helping. So what's Cali VIP? Again, it's that streamlined mechanism that is all online. It's an online application process for first come, first serve. You meet our minimum qualifications that we spell out for you. If funds are available, you will get a reservation for your rebate. Reservation meaning you apply ahead of time, telling us what you're going to do. You meet those minimum qualifications and requirements. Your funds get reserved. You now have a ticking clock to go finish your application and your installation, turn in everything, and then we pay you. And so it's a lot faster. Someone asked about small businesses. This gets rid of having to create a grant proposal that is competitive against a company that can spend $20,000 to write this grant. And again, if you meet the minimum qualifications, you'll get it. So how much money do we have? Today, we have four projects that are open and live, totaling $51 million. We will be launching two more this year for another $20 million. And we've recently announced three projects in 2020 that will add roughly, if I get the numbers right, about $54 million of Energy Commission funding. But the important thing is we have funding partners as well, adding another $30 to $40 million over 4 years. So we have a lot of money. I also have the authority to implement projects up to $200 million when each fiscal year adds more dollars, and likely that will be hitting in a year and a half, and I will be going and asking probably for $1 billion. So here's, again, those projects we have today. I'm just going to go quickly because all of this is on our website, calivip.org. You can get all of this information. But again, we're covering about 13 counties, I believe. Maybe that's by the end of this year. $73.5 million that includes some of our partnership funds, and we do level two and fast chargers. No level ones, sorry. So I'm going to talk to you today about kind of those two projects. We do have that first one I mentioned in Fresno County Live, but I'm not going to talk about that because we are launching this other project that also includes Fresno County, Kern, and San Joaquin. We'll be launching in December that will pretty much be a better version for Fresno. And so when that happens, we will be closing the Fresno one probably soon and merging that into this project. So this is kind of a breakdown of just how much each county will be getting for dollars, also by each technology. And that $0 in Fresno level two is just to show that whatever remaining funds are from that first project, when we close it, it's going to be rolled into Fresno County's level two here. We also want to note, I will note that right here. So here's kind of what we offer, how much money for each charger. We do a per connector rebate for level twos at $3,500, as well as some adders if you're in a disadvantaged community, an extra $500 per connector, and if you're a multi-unit dwelling, another $1,000. So if you're a disadvantaged multi-unit dwelling, you're eligible for up to $5,000 per connector. Our fast chargers are a little bit more money because they obviously cost more, but $70,000 for regular installations or up to 75% of the total project costs, and an additional $10,000 and 5% for disadvantaged communities. We also want to note that we do have been working with the Air District on their charge-up program to allow their funds to be stacked on top of ours for even additional rebates. The main takeaway is through that combination, you're basically allowed to get up to 100% of your costs covered. You're not obviously not going to be profiting from any Air District or state money, but we do want to cover as much as we can for you. So you know how much you can get per charger, per connector, so how much money can you really get? We allow up to four fast chargers at one site and up to 10 connectors for level two at one site. You also can do combo installations to do four fast chargers and 10 level two connectors all at one site to really maximize all of that. It also points out to know that you can install additional chargers if you desire, but your rebate will be capped at those limits. So if you want to do 10 fast chargers, go for it. If you want to do 50 level twos, go for it. But you're only going to receive the rebates up to those maxes. This slide just to say, is to say that we have a cap. So we make sure one big fish doesn't come in and take all of the funding, that we want multiple applicants to be eligible. So again, protecting the mom and pop shops that don't want to compete against the whales. And it's pretty much always referred to as a buffet style. It's come, apply for what you can and handle, complete that project, and then come back for more. So that level is right here. And it may seem low or high to some, but 320,000 really means that you can do one fast charger site, maxing out four fast chargers if you're in a DAC for 80,000, or you could be doing a lot of level twos. So who's eligible to apply? Anybody. Anybody can apply. You just have to either own the property or have permission from the site owner, obviously. Public agencies, tribal communities, lands, governments, anybody can apply. You also just have to have a California business license. So a general individual cannot apply to do a project. They have to be licensed in California to do so. So where can I get chargers? There's a difference between level two eligibility and fast chargers. Level twos pretty much can go anywhere. With that said, you cannot go, we do not fund single family residence homes. Our dollars are public funds and have to be used for public purposes. So we cannot have it go to a single family residence. It also cannot be into a dedicated space for the CEO of a company, or if you're at an MUD, it can't be tied to a single residence parking space. These all have to be shared use, meaning multiple vehicles or drivers can use them. The bottom just says basically you're going to follow all the laws when you do this and that they're going to be safe. Fast chargers, again, these are the only type of sites that are eligible. They have to be available 24/7 all the time, can't be behind a gate, can't be restricted at any times. And these site types are chosen basically because they're along the typical travel route a driver's going to be going anyway. We don't want you having to go out of your way to find a spot to charge. This just shows, if you go online again to calivip.org, we list out our requirements for chargers and we show all of our eligible chargers as well. So if you want to do research on what chargers I can get, we offer a wide range from low cost to the Ferraris, but all of them are eligible. Eligible cost is pretty much anything. It's the charger, it's the installation, it's the utility upgrade, it's your extended warranties, networking agreements, sub out signage, almost anything. What we can't pay for is the actual permit fee itself. We aren't covering solar panels and anything, again, that's covered by an additional rebate. We won't pay that. So timeline, obviously, that comes up again. Why is permitting all this important? Because that ticking clock happens. You have 15 months once your funds are reserved to have your fast charger operational, all of your paperwork submitted, and open to the public and basically done. So that's aggressive, but we have to be aggressive if we're going to get 250,000 chargers. The level two installation is even more aggressive for 9 months. So what does that mean? Talk to the utilities ahead of time, have an executed site host agreement done, get your jurisdiction streamlined if it's not already, and be ready to start work as soon as your reservation happens. This is our tentative schedule coming soon. Again, just showing our two projects to launch. So the landing page for San Joaquin will come up, I think, in the next 2 or 3 weeks, so look out for that. More information, again, everything is on calivip.org. Lots of resources about what chargers are best for your property. We have a Yelp-style mechanism called CaliVIP Connects that helps you research manufacturers of chargers, the networks, the utility providers, everything. So go there. The docket link also goes to past presentations we've done and all additional information. And then the Center for Sustainable Energy is the company that was awarded our grant for CaliVIP that implements all of this for us. And definitely feel free to reach out to me as well. So I don't know if that was 10, but that was as fast as I could go.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Brian. Great job. A lot of information condensed efficiently. Thank you. Matt and Ashley.
That's me.
Oh, you know what? We're going to do Anne before Matt and Ashley then. That is true. I did get one name right, so I'm approaching 50% now, I think.
I appreciate that, Rob. Thank you again, everyone, and Camperson with PG&E, our electric vehicle fleet program. There's some similarities between us. It is a statewide program, so SoCal Edison, which Omar will talk about after me, a lot of similarities and some differences as well. We have $236 million of funding over the next 5 years. SoCal Edison has a little bit more than us. We are tasked to convert 700 sites and 6,500 new EVs in Northern California. Again, this slide is redundant. We're looking at anything from class 2 to 8. That's a fleet vehicle. So it's really anything from delivery vans, local delivery vans, to transit shuttles to heavy duty. There are two options. We're going to construct to the meter, the TTM construction, and then behind the meter is typically on the customer, and for that we'll give incentives and rebates. SoCal Edison goes all the way to the charger stub. Kudos to them. They do have more money. So I think they're going to spend it very quickly because behind the meter can be expensive. But again, PG&E will do all that permitting, all the civil work, everything to the meter, all the way up to the panel, the switchgear of the customer owned. We'll drop in a brand new meter, so it will be a brand new service. I know Ryan has had some hurdles coming over. That's when he's talking to service planning. If you were just to call PG&E and get a new service, you'd have to wait in line behind everyone else getting a new service. But with this program, we have dedicated resources. So if it's EV fleet, make sure you get to the EV fleet folks. And again, behind the meter, typically up to the customer. If there's an opportunity for us to fall within the cost thresholds of the program, PG&E will also go up to the charger, but it's a little bit rare, but has been seen. If we can't go all the way to the charger and the customer's tasked with building behind the meter, we give them vehicle incentives. So it's a per vehicle incentive, $9,000 for your transit shuttles or buses, $4,000 for schools and delivery vans, and $3,000 for anything else. So we do a per vehicle incentive to help mitigate that cost for behind the meter construction. We also will offer you as a transit up to 50%, 50% on your chargers as well, which is very exciting. So for the DC fast charge, you'll see we can offer up to $42,000 per charger. And these rebates are completely stackable with any other funding that you get. And here is to the meter. If we're able to go all the way to the charger, you just forego those vehicle rebates or incentives, and then we also offer those charger rebates are for transit, for DACs, and for school buses. So if you're a commercial business, You need to be your site needs to be in a DAC to take advantage of those. But again, we'll walk you through everything you need once you give us a call. We just need a two-vehicle minimum. So even if you're doing a pilot, let us know, complete the application, work with your OEMs, your original equipment manufacturers on whatever vehicle you need, and your charge vendors, and we'll come along and work with you on the site infrastructure. The process: just submit an application. It just starts with an application. Know who your vehicle, what kind of load you need, what your delivery schedule is over the next 5 years, and then we'll submit. We'll put you through the process. We'll come out and do a site walk. I have to tell you, the last program was a three-year program, our EVCM program for light duty, workplace, and multi-unit dwellings. It sold out in a year or less. So we have a finite amount of funding. This is a five-year program, but I would urge anybody that's considering getting electric fleet vehicles in the next 2 to 3 years, come and meet with us as soon as possible. The very exciting thing is when you get this new EV service, you will also qualify for a new dedicated EV rate. And I'm happy to say this rate, we have a preliminary decision just this week. It took 3 years in the making, a lot and back and forth with the CPUC. So we're super excited. They've approved some pieces of this. So this slide is already obsolete. So disregard, but I will give you high level. As far as your demand, I know KW, KWH, demand and usage can be confusing. If you've ever looked at your utility bill, the peak demand is all over the map. Every month it can be very different. You never really know what you're going to pay. With this new rate, we have a subscription-based demand charge. Very exciting. You buy up until a certain point. Now, right there it says 50 kW, but that's obsolete. We're going to have to work with this preliminary decision and see what that really is. But you have a fixed fee every month, just like your data plan on your cell phone. So you can utilize, if you have a couple of chargers, you only need 100 kW, you know what your charge will be every month for that. We also have KWH. We actually have a super off-peak period in the middle of the day, which is great for anybody charging, obviously, in the middle of the day, whether it's transit or schools. If you're able to take advantage of that super off-peak rate, and only 9 cents a kWh, so very, very inexpensive. SoCal Edison, I think, has gotten rid of their demand charges for the CV rate. Again, kudos to them. If you need to manage your demand, we feel. If you don't manage your demand, then the utility can't. So as far as grid management, so we're just making it easier for you and putting it into a subscription-based rate. You'll see that the triangles are diesel fuel. The blue is a regular commercial rate, and the green is the new EV rate. So if you look at that across the board in various segments, transit especially, you'll probably save about 30% off gasoline. And a regular commercial rate. We have 7 building commercial rates, but this new EV rate, you should save about 30% every month. And again, lots of resources. So let us know your questions. Give us a call. Come online. And I hope to work with you soon. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ann. Appreciate it. So Matt and Ashley, still not? Now we're going to Omar. I'm going to read the slides now before I go off the script anymore. We'll just go for it that way. I'm getting a lot of curveballs thrown at me here.
All right. Omar. Hey, good to see everybody. Thanks for having us.
Can we see like the congratulatory thing one more time? I like that. Hang on. I like that. It's good stuff.
I have nothing to do with any of this, by the way. So thanks for having me. I know that we don't operate a ton of service territory within Fresno County, but I'm happy to be here just to let you guys know sort of what's going on with Southern California Edison in the transportation electrification space. So we have a number of different programs to electrify vehicles across the different segments. Medium and heavy duty is a pretty big focus of ours right now with the Charge Ready Transport program, which is a lot of what today's content is going to cover. Also happens to cover transit school buses. Workplace and public was covered by our Charge Ready pilot and hopefully soon to be Charge Ready 2. Which we're waiting for a decision on from the California Public Utilities Commission, as well as at-home charging, something we've always incentivized, but our business programs, Charge Ready, do not directly incentivize at-home charging. So a typical work order from a utility's perspective usually ends at that dotted line. So you have the transformer, feeds the meter, and then you take it from the panel off to whatever you're serving. Charge Ready covers everything in a turnkey manner. So from design and construction and everything you can think of that's associated with the project, it's actually handled in-house by SCE. The behind-the-meter infrastructure design has actually, the contract's been awarded to Blair Church and Flynn, which is a local engineering firm. They are taking care of the entire Charge Ready program, which is kind of neat to see, in my opinion, as a local guy. So that's kind of nice. So it's a little bit nice in the sense that you give it to SCE. That's not to say that we are judge, jury, and executioner on all these projects. We will consult actively with any in-house engineering firms that you decide to partner with on your project. So Charge Ready Transport, this is the big thing we're taking to market right now. Total budget of about $350 million to electrify 8,500 vehicles. So it covers the cost of all the infrastructure up to the charging station. So the bottom of the slide gives you an idea as to what the timelines look like. I can tell you from experience that that's pretty close to accurate. I personally ran a pilot with the city of Porterville to electrify 10 of their transit buses, which fell similarly to this process in the transit bus pilot. We had three pilots territory-wide. Porterville is awarded one of them. And the entire project took 14 months, top to bottom, a little less. So we're taking it a step past, just throwing a bunch of money at electrification. We are really working actively to do fleet assessments, cost assessments as well. This is something that a lot of you folks as transit agencies and as transit managers don't have a ton of experience with, utility bills, KWH, KW demand charges, and things of that sort. So we're actively going out and offering this as a service to our customers who are considering electrification to say, okay, this is what your all-in cost of charging would be over the next year, two, three, four, and five. So Charge Ready 2 is the big thing that we're waiting on as far as approval goes from the CPUC. So that program is pretty significant to deploy 32,000 level 2 charging ports at 3,200 workplaces, apartments, destination centers, and fleets. I hate reading off of PowerPoint. Ryan, I would not have a PowerPoint either if I was not backed by a giant utility. So just so you know, don't feel bad about it. This is, yeah, don't worry about it. So quite a big scale for Charge Ready 2. This is going to be the big thing that we're going to take to market over the next several years in our service territory. So we also have these two programs that we're waiting for approval on, AB 1082, to give infrastructure to schools, K-12. Those would be level 1 and 2 charging stations. That would actually qualify sort of light-duty fleet vehicles as well as school buses, because in my experience, level 2 school buses do fall into the level 2 category. The charging station that Visalia Unified School District is adopting right now is roughly 19 kW. Which still falls under that level 2 threshold. So that could be deployed to school buses. And then AB 1083 for California State Parks and Beaches. And then, of course, the at-home rebates, which I would be remiss if I skipped over this. So there are rebates, vehicle rebates, and these are the only vehicle rebates we give, which is a distinction from PG&E's program, whereas we cover everything up to the charging stations. We do not give vehicle rebates with the exception of at-home vehicles of $1,000. And that could actually be awarded to up to the third owner of the vehicle. So he buys it new, he gets it, and then she can get it. Okay. So I don't want to skip over the importance of demand charges and the fact that we are, in fact, on the EV rate, waiving demand charges, or there's actually no demand charges built into the rate until 2024. Thereafter, we are phasing them in over a 5-year period. So it's a real great time to figure out what your load looks like and how to manage that load. So that's sort of the impetus behind that. Any questions, or we're going to wait? Where is it?
Yeah, we'll wait.
Okay.
As soon as I get the panel order right and everyone has had a chance, then we'll take all the questions at once.
Hey, I think you're up.
Now, I tried to introduce you guys multiple times now, but
this time? Yeah, this time.
We're actually here now.
Let me ask you, I pushed this arrow, right?
I think so.
Hi, everybody.
I also didn't do a PowerPoint. So.
Hi, everybody. My name's Matthew. I work at the Valley Air District. If you're interested in these programs, we'll get to know each other real soon. So let's get started. Just a little bit of background. Obviously, here in the Valley, we have the need for clean vehicles. Think of all the transit corridors running through here. We face about a significant portion of the emissions emitted, sourced in the Valley are NOx emissions, nitrous oxides. CO2 is the poster child right now, but you know, 80s, 90s, nitrous oxides was the big one. You think of Los Angeles smog, the stuff that tears up your lungs, those are the nitrous oxides. Further challenge, the Valley is home to 23 out of the top 30 disadvantaged communities. So just, you know, the finances aren't quite readily available. It's just another hurdle for us to, for everyone to jump over. We lag as well behind the rest of the state in terms of market penetration. The Valley tends to be a little bit more, you know, get out there in your big pickup truck and get to work, right? So we're really working on promoting the feasibility and the accessibility of the technology to Valley residents. Only 3% of state electric vehicle of participants in the state programs are located here. So in 2014, the Valley Air District's governing board approved an action plan in terms of promoting clean vehicle EV technology, and that resulted in the Charge Up program in 2015. So the goals of the Charge Up program included just strengthening the Valley's EV network, as well as reducing the very prominent and reason and well-founded range anxiety that drivers currently face. A lot of people are worried about driving to the grocery store and running out of charge on the way there, so we're working on mitigating that sort of anxiety. We also just want to promote the awareness, you know, promote the technology to Valley residents, like I referenced earlier. A lot of people just don't simply believe in it right now. We're trying to get them. We're trying to change that mindset. Charge Up provides incentives for public agencies, businesses, and multi-use developments in order to install publicly accessible electric vehicle chargers throughout the Valley. I should specify there, they don't entirely have to be publicly accessible. Obviously, if you have a we offer workplace charging incentives for these chargers to be used by your employees only. Multi-use developments, obviously, they're for residential use. So some different funding levels that we offer through Charge Up. Level 2 single ports, $5,000 per charger. Level 2 dual ports, $6,000 per charger. The DC fast chargers, the poster childs, those are $25 per unit. That being said, we do have a funding cap per site of $50,000 per year. If you are a school district or, you know, City of Fresno, you can apply for $50,000 per each site that you'd like to install chargers at. The incentive is designed to cover up to 75%. In my experience actually processing these, though, there are outliers to that. I've seen our incentive alone cover up to 80, 90%. Of course, it could only cover a third of the costs if it's a retrofit and you're trenching, like Ryan was talking about, if you're trenching from one side all the way to the other, your costs are going to reflect that and the incentive may cover a little bit less. Criteria. So minimum requirements. We require you to enter into you must enter into an agreement with the district to receive funds. You have to be approved by the district on that agreement before the purchase and installation of any chargers. This has happened before where people get real excited. They apply. They think that now that they've applied, they're good to go and make their purchases. We have to work around it or cancel them outright, and canceling outright's never any fun. You must own the site in which they're going to be installed, or at least have written permission from the site owner, as well as you have to maintain these chargers through the length of the agreement, which is 3 years. Minimum site requirements, you've got to be located within our boundaries. You have to have the designated signage and striping installed as well. Sadly, we do not currently offer an incentive for home charging. That may change down the line. The minimum charger requirements. So these are fairly standard. They have to be hardwired or standalone solar units, and they have to meet two safety standards up there. If you find a charger that doesn't meet those standards, let us know, because that's probably that's a big safety hazard. If applicable, you have to have an open source means for payment for anyone using that charger. I've seen multi-use developments that don't include these. They just sort of roll the cost of using the charger into your rent. It depends on the site. We do require the capability to track usage. They have to be metered. It's simple. We just want to know the usage, the frequency, the duration of use. So step one, you're going to submit a complete application, please, to the district. You are not allowed to purchase or install anything related to this program until you have our voucher issued from the district. We want to see quotes and estimates related to all project costs, as well as the classic IRS W-9. Send us over a proposed site map too, please. This doesn't lock you in to where they're going to go. This is just for our peace of mind and knowing where these things are going to end up. Step two, we review and approve. We try to get this done as quickly as possible. Upon approval, you will receive your voucher electronically. Now that you have that voucher in hand, you're free to go ahead and purchase and install your EV chargers. Vouchers are valid for 1 year. We work with applicants, though. We understand how these construction projects get, and we'll issue extensions as needed. Step four, applicant is going to receive you'll receive your voucher, you'll complete the construction, all steps involved, and now you can submit your claim for payment. This is going to include invoices for all chargers, installation, trenching, work on the panel, whatever's involved. Site photos of the chargers as well as their own individual serial numbers. We also like to see striping and signage if those are required in the project. Final step there is if it's a publicly accessible charger bank, it does need to be listed on the DOE's website so we can really generate this map, make it publicly accessible of where these charging stations are. And within about 45 to 60 working days, depending on the process, we will issue reimbursement. Annual reporting. So we're going to follow up with you once a year for 3 years. We want to know the utilization of these chargers, what's their access, are they popular, the frequency and duration of use. This information is going to stem from the metering solution I referenced earlier. Your contractor should know everything about the meter that's going to be installed. There are different options and solutions, and I hope it's not as complicated as it sounds. It's very simple. And after those 3 years, though, you're released. We aren't going to bother you anymore. Our concern, the project is complete. We won't ask you any more questions. Additional funding opportunities. So our program allows us to stack grants with FCIP, PG&E, SoCal Edison, the CalEVA grant, as already discussed, $4,000 and $7,000 PG&E EV Charge Up Network. They have some larger scale projects in mind. SoCal Edison, they've given some details on that already. So, I believe.
Our NED is closed.
Oh, it's closed. That's old information then.
Okay, I'll, I'm going to get the red smiley face really quickly. He said he wasn't going to take the full 10 minutes. So I work on our public benefit grant program, and it's for new alternative fuel vehicles. And so we just wanted to let you know that we do provide incentives for vehicles. And it's basically, we'll skip that because I don't care. I don't like slides either. Okay, so it's basically eligible applicants is public agencies, and in addition, our board just approved to have our community action agencies. So Karen with EOC, we love you. And then also, you have to be located within our boundaries, and the vehicles have to be new, and it has to be a plug-in hybrid. That's a SULEV. So we have a list of eligible vehicles. It has to be a fully electric vehicle, or it has to be an alternative fueled vehicle. And our board just approved hybrid pursuit rated vehicles for law enforcement purposes. Gross vehicle weight rating, less than 14,000 pounds. As Moses said, he's gotten those Zeniths from us. We've helped to fund those. Those are within that 14,000 or less pounds. You have to use it 75% in our boundaries. And the funding is first come, first serve. And like Matt was saying, with our programs, you usually have to have a contract first prior to purchasing. And right now we have a huge wait list. I apologize, but this year we have seen a massive influx of applications. Yay for us, not necessarily for you guys. I'm sorry you have to wait. But if you are patient, we will get to you, and it's worth it because it's up to $20,000 per vehicle. And so with some of these, you can get deals, you stack them with the other rebates available through the utilities, and you're almost paying for a full vehicle right there. And this also includes your little electric carts, too. I know a lot of school districts like that. Okay, I think that's pretty much it. But one point I want to make is that I've worked on a lot of the cap and trade projects. You know, Porterville's got a cap and trade one, and Moses is on part of our cap and trade one with Proterra Vehicles. And the lessons that I'm learning is please talk to your utility provider first and get your infrastructure plan set in motion. As Moses was saying, that's what he would do, you know, differently a second time around. And that's what, you know, I think all of us, as we're going through these with these grants from CARB and from the different agencies, is that you really need to talk to your utility provider and make sure that you can get your infrastructure in place so that it's ready when you do get your vehicles. And especially on grants, because there's a lot of times there's reporting requirements that if your vehicles are delivered, you can't use them. You know, I have a project like that, that the infrastructure, we were just waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting. And it's finally done, and now I don't have my full year of reporting that I'm supposed to have for the state of California for CARB. So that's my one little, please do that first. Okay, thank you.
Excellent feedback. Thank you very much. He did or didn't? Oh, that was very kind of you. All right, Doug, close it up for us.
All right, this is the toughest spot to be in. And I'm stuck with halfway between not liking slides, so I just went Spartan with my slides. We got four questions they wanted me to ask. What happens after a charger is installed? Who owns and maintains them? What's the ongoing cost? And user-based or fee-based programs. So my snarky but somewhat serious answer is if you go through the trouble to install a charging station, I really hope it charges vehicles. Truly and sincerely. There's nothing more painful than going into a business meeting with people who've had a bad experience with this and trying to overcome that obstacle of this stuff doesn't work. So, yes, I hope you do have a good experience. Everything that's bad in this industry is bad for everybody in the industry, which includes me. So we do hope you have a good experience. Seriously, though, there's kind of two types of chargers, and we didn't really touch on this a little bit. We did a little bit with the incentive side. There are non-network chargers, which are basically extension cords. It's the best way to describe them. There's no intelligent feedback. There's no interoperability. It is a cord that you plug a vehicle into, and that is it. That's your only interaction with it. Then there are network solutions, which have internet capability. There's a variety of features and functionality that go along with that. But it also gives you insight and visibility into the station, its usage, what it's doing, whether or not it's working, how many people are using it, the ability to charge a price, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Virtually anything you can think of, it can do. And so your relationship with the charging station and the vendor will vary a lot depending on which charging station solution you have chosen. If you choose an extension cord, you're going to have a relationship with an extension cord. If you choose an internet-capable station, you're going to have a very complex relationship with a lot of data and information. So loosely speaking, that's it. Your ongoing costs are going to be broken into two categories. Once again, this is kind of dependent on whether or not you have a network solution or not. Network solution, you're going to have a maintenance warranty, typically. They're usually optional. I don't know any vendors out there that make it mandatory, but they can be full parts labor, parts only, labor only, kind of depends on the vendor. Your network agreement is the second one. So for a network capable charger, which is one that's connected to the internet, you're probably paying an internet fee or cellular connectivity fee and a software license fee for the software that gives you the visibility into that operability of the station. And you know, for us as a company, we don't sell anything non-networked. Everything that we sell has interoperability. So who owns and maintains stations? Most typically, ownership's going to fall down to whoever purchases it, typically speaking. There are the utility programs out there where they will actually own and maintain some percentage of the stuff that they deploy. If you get into that program, they're going to own and maintain it. You don't have to deal with it. For most of you, expect to own the station yourselves. There are a few caveats to that, but for the most part, ownership is going to fall to the site host, and that's actually probably good. When you relinquish ownership, you're relinquishing some control. There's always something that goes along with it. You're going to lose the ability to charge the price you want to drivers. So you're going to have some vendor charging a fee, and you get no say in what that fee is, and it may deter drivers. So you may get a free brick in your parking lot, which is not what you want. So keep that in mind. Network stations typically have warranty options from the manufacturer. We kind of went over that. These options will allow you to fix your costs, and this is really what I'd say about the warranty. When choosing whether or not to use a warranty, think about what the use case is. Is it a fleet station, and that vehicle is going to come back, have to get a charge over a certain amount of time, and that's the only station that you have? If that station goes down and is down for a week, what's the consequence of that to your operations and your fleet? And do you have other options? If it's a publicly available charger in a garage or a parking lot, maybe that station can go down for a week and it doesn't have to be fixed and there's really no harm. It's just an inconvenience and it's pretty marginal. So depending on what it is, you may very well want a warranty or not. The other thing is on budget, it fixes your cost. No matter whether or not you have a station in a fleet or publicly available, if you have a warranty, you have a known quantity and a known cost. Cost is going to be X every year. That's it. It's full parts labor. Nothing else to deal with, and that's kind of peace of mind. So if you're working on limited budgets, you can actually factor that in, fix your costs, and then you don't have any unforeseen expenses down the stretch. So fee-based and free programs for stations, there's a lot of stuff out there. These programs that are mentioned are probably the best option in today's world. There are a variety of ownership models, which I didn't really talk about because they're so long and complicated, it would just make everybody's heads explode here late in the day. But layering these programs, whether they be utility, air district, CEC, local incentives, you can get to a free project. It is entirely possible. And you can also own the equipment, and it can be paid for 5 years down the road. We've actually put programs together like that for people. If they fit all the boxes, they fit the mold, it can be free, truly, sincerely. But it's also not super common. So do expect to have some out-of-pocket cost. That's certainly true if you're looking at fleet behind restricted access facility at limited use. Public stuff's a little more available with the incentives that are out there right now. So that's it.
Terrific. Thank you very much, Doug. We'd like to open it up to questions now. We'll take that one a little bit shorter, maybe just for the next 5 minutes or so. We'll do questions on this one so that we can be ending on time here. I would like to point out the very first item that we had up here was just a thank you to the Air Pollution Control District.
You're welcome.
Somebody that retired their old vehicle. You'll notice there's two likes on that. I added a like on that one for myself. Well, I used that same program several years back as well.
Yes, and I usually do tell everyone, like, we have program for residents. I mean, I've gotten $3,000 for my electric vehicle. I drive a Leaf, and so it's open to Valley residents. We have programs for cars. We have our burn cleaner program for your fireplaces. The rules just kind of changed on that. And we have lawnmowers. We have a lot of programs for residents if you just go on our website.
Terrific. Thank you very much. I think this is a pretty common question. I know at the local level we hear this one a lot and even have this question ourselves as a local agency. So for the Cal EVIP, the rules for the funding on the public chargers – do the public chargers have to be available to the public 24/7? And the reason why we deal with this is because if you have a city hall parking lot that is closed or not easily accessible during the weekend times or something of that nature, but is open during the week on a Monday through Friday, is there a level of allowability for that, or is it 24/7 and that's it?
So clarifying, only the level 2 chargers, or I'm sorry, only the fast chargers have that 24/7 requirement. We know that that's the gas station model, that if someone's pulling up, they want a quick charge, so they need to depend on that charger being available. The level 2 having a longer dwell time does not have the requirement to be available 24/7. It can be public, it can be private, it can be mixed.
Okay, terrific. Very clear. Thank you. And I think, probably one of the most common questions that we hear often are for the public chargers, who really ultimately ends up paying the usage fees? I mean, I've had people say to me before, is it SoCal Edison, is it PG&E, or is it the private property owner?
It can be any of the it's never SCE. There is a – somebody has to take take service of the meter. So I can give you examples. This will actually knock out the top question as well. Are there any examples of municipalities that have implemented free charging programs? So I personally did a project with the city of Hanford, project with Kings County, and a project with the city of Porterville for those level two charging stations. And in all three cases, those are owned and operated, and the meter is paid for by the cities or municipalities. For the Kings County and City of Hanford, those were fleet applications, so those were closed off from the public, and they get a bill for that service account and that meter every month, just like any other service. City of Porterville has a public use charging, did a public use charging application for their downtown area. They do have they did take service of that meter themselves. If it could vary, if you have a property owner that wants to take ownership of it, it just sort of depends, but it's never the utility.
You can charge for free at the air district.
Yeah.
Also, okay, Rob, our solar units in the rural areas, they're free to the general public. We have two nozzles, one for transit vehicles and one for the general public.
Yeah, not pulling anything from the grid either there, so I mean, no cost, which is always a great thing. Now, I think also with a lot of the incentives and whatnot that we're talking about here, while a lot of that is placing infrastructure, there are obviously still programs that are either currently in place or I'm sure coming online in the years to come as we get more of this infrastructure in place that can help incentivize some of those costs. There are certainly programs right now that are offered by PG&E and SoCal that offer, you know, EV rates and whatnot, the discounted rates. So, but yeah, that's one of the big questions that we get. And in particular, I know from the private property owners, that we'd love to have something like that, but how much is it going to cost us over time? So, but I, that's easy. Now I can at least say, well, it'll never be PG&E or SoCal. But
I don't want to speak for
PG&E. No, it's true.
she'll confirm that one. Okay, on the network, networking chargers, I've noticed that when you look into a lot of these programs here, one of the requirements, of course, is that the chargers themselves, that they need to be networked, right? Which makes perfect sense. You need to communicate with each other. You need to get that real-time feedback on how it's being used. Is it consistently online? All of those type of items. But the ongoing costs associated with that, is that also looked at similarly from PG&E and SoCal as far as even though the collection and use of that data is still going to be utilized by you guys, is there any cost assistance with any of that, or is that same type of thing? That's going to go back to the operator.
That's going to go back to the operator. Okay. The networking fees themselves for a period, and I totally glazed over this in my presentation, for a period of 10 years for our original pilot, you are required to own and maintain the charging stations themselves. We take your data, we aggregate it, and we report it to the PUC. Okay. That's what we do with it.
And I just want to add, the data we do need for the CPUC, that's how we're able to provide this program. That's what we need to give back to the CPUC. So it is time of use data. It's really just KW, KWH. And then that way we know what to bill you, obviously. So,
okay. So, and I think, again, there was – oh, yeah, go ahead.
I'd add in for Cali VIP, we do require all of our chargers to be networked. Our requirements are probably the most strict requirements in the nation for eligible equipment. But we cover those costs. So, again, those network agreements are an allowable cost towards your rebate. We require our level twos to be a minimum of a two-year network agreement. If you want to get a 10-year, you can have that be eligible as well. Our fast chargers are a five-year minimum as well, but we'll cover all those costs. Our biggest, I'd say, barrier is not even the network or our other specs, but I'd say we require all of our level twos to be ENERGY STAR certified. And that was a big change where when we started this in Fresno, there was only one company that, well, actually there was zero when we made the requirement. One became ENERGY STAR certified pretty quickly, ChargePoint. Today there's about, I'd say, eight companies, and by the end of this year I'd expect that to be about 15 companies. So we set the strictest requirements. I have a tough chin and take the hits, but we make the changes happen that's best for the utility grid and the public.
Terrific. I think, you know, one of the major things I'm taking away from today is just a lot of programs, a lot of incentives, a lot of opportunity, and this is obviously an area that is growing very quickly, which is a good thing. We want to be able to see that. But I think most important, what I'm really taking away from today is anybody representing a local agency where you want to see some of these projects taking place, step number one, talk to your utility service provider, right? Talk through that. There's a lot of great programs on the back end, but we need to make sure that the utilities, which can often be a time challenge, of course, we want to make sure that all of that is laid out and that we're all then working together. Being able to stack a lot of these programs and everything, I think, is obviously a great thing. So I'd like to say thank you to all of the panelists and all of the great information that you guys brought forward for us today. So thank you very much. At this time, I'm actually going to turn it over to Christine Kai, who's deputy director here with Fresno Cog.
Well, first of all, let's give a round of applause to our speakers. Excellent presentation with or without the slides and great information. And thank you all for spending the afternoon with us. I hope we all learned a lot from the experts. If you have any questions or there's any area or topic you would like us to explore down the road, please contact our very capable staff, Trihear Cole and Braden Duran. And their contact information is on the screen. Also, I would like to take the opportunity to give a quick plug for our transportation summit, which is related to the topic we're discussing today. So Fresno Cog and Fresno State were hosting a transportation summit on October 23rd. At the summit, we're going to have a panel discussing the utility needs of EV charging. And we're going to also have an EV plan tour, so it's going to be very exciting. The registration is open, and you can find the information on our website at fresnocog.org. Again, thank you very much for your time. I hope to see you all at the summit. Thank you.